they are still seeing themselves as rebellion, but you are the establishment. All their heroes were not the common man. Look at, for example, Karl Marx. From my perspective, the biggest two threats to what we call the Western system, Western cultures, are right now. The Islamists and the far left, the communists, were going hand in hand. But the moment the Islamists took power, they also killed the communists. Same thing that Hitler did, from the river to the sea. You do realize, and with the pride flag, if they take over, they're gonna hang you. There's a fatwa against me, basically. I was almost kidnapped near my house, and they failed.
How did they fail?
Welcome to another episode of Heretics, and today's guest is Mayar Tusi, who is a pretty big name all over the YouTubes and the onlines and all of these kinds of things. So Mayar is a working class son of a refugee. He's a conservative. He's Persian. His father's under house arrest. He has a kind of, I suppose it's an unofficial fatwa against him. I mean, the whole point of a fatwa is that it is official, but my understanding from what he tells me in this interview is that it's sort of, just threats have been made against him. And he speaks about some of the hypocrisies from some of the woke side. I know we've been down this route before, but he's a really interesting voice and he's got a really unique perspective on it. So I hope you enjoy it. Do please check out his Mayar Tusi TV, where he has lots of different guests and presenters and things. It's a whole thing going on with more than 500,000 subscribers. It's a huge enterprise on its own. And by the way, I've not told you guys yet, but I now have a Substack, which is really nice because I get to write in a much more nuanced way than what we see in maybe the YouTube, at least, and sometimes on the audio podcast where everything happens in the moment. But I actually get to write these thought out pieces. And the first one was about the email that cancelled me recently, and it had in the first day 23,000 views. And it's free to read. You only have to pay if you want to have extra bits like comment and chat and those kinds of things. So do please go to andrewgoldheretics.substack.com and I'll see you over there. And I'll see you at the end of this episode.
Is the BBC totally ideologically? No. How are you? Tell me a little bit about your background and your channel.
Yes. Well, according to the enemies of the channel, I'm funded by CIA, Mossad, MI6, CCP, FSB, the Iranian regime and all that. But
that's great. We're done. Thank you. Let's go.
But for those who don't know, I'm ethnicity-wise, I'm Persian. Mm-hmm. I was born in Iran. My mother was a political refugee, an accidental one. We'll get into that in a bit. So I came here as a child. And then I got into politics. Big mistake. There's no money in it. And then accidentally, I started a YouTube channel. I was just frustrated over the Brexit negotiations days. Theresa May wasn't making a mess, so I was just basically making videos about that. So everything I have is actually thanks to Theresa May. So thank you, Theresa.
Well done, Theresa.
And then it just became the go-to channel for a lot of people for daily news and everything else. Now I'm here now. So
well, you're one of the people who paved the way for channels like this to be able to do what they do. So I and we, whoever they are, thank you for that.
I appreciate it.
And with that in mind, I mean, the other side of that is the BBC. Is the BBC totally captured ideologically by the woke or the woke left or the left?
It really depends how we define it, because when we say the left, we'll have to basically mean, you know, decades ago when the left were the left. The left, by definition, has been anti-establishment. And so at different times, different countries, they meant different things. So Marxism, or 200 years ago, 150 years ago, was liberalism in this country. Then certain things become status quo. So this country is by nature now classical liberal. You know, the conservatives conserve values of democracy and small governments and free market, free speech and all that. But the left that we're talking about, they, over the last few months, yes, they are ideological. But now that they've captured, so yes, they have, they're no longer left. I don't call them the left. So they are the establishment. It's interesting when, for example, just going sidetrack, people like Greta Thunberg and her friends go out there outside these conferences, the international institutions protest for net zero. But inside the building, they've already accepted net zero. So it's interesting that they are still seeing themselves as rebellion. But you are the establishment. So the likes of the BBC, and there are so many examples over the years, in perfect example during the Brexit days, and their bias being shown so obviously, they still see themselves as, hey, we are actually against establishment. We're holding the power to account. You are the power. That's the problem.
Yeah, the BBC certainly is. I suppose they might say, but the people or the power, or, you know, Brexit won.
Yeah.
And they were sort of quite Remain-y. So they would say they were counterculture in that sense.
Yeah, but that's the interesting thing, because even the liberal left until recent times, and, you know, the comedy primarily came from the liberal side. And towards the last few decades, it became unfunny. But they didn't even realize it, because they changed. They used to punch up. The left used to punch up. Comedy used to punch up. Now, evil rich bankers and Tories and all that, right? Now they punch down. They say, oh, these fat white gammon Brexiteers from Essex going to Benidorm. They're punching down now. So they still think they're delusional. They still think that, no, we're talking Brexit is establishment, the power we're holding it to account. But you're literally attacking just ordinary people that you see as uneducated and idiots. You're no longer attacking the rich bankers, because you are the rich bankers.
you're attacking the working classes.
Yeah, literally.
Isn't it remarkable how they've managed to do that? And they've got this kind of this mad paradox here where we can only. I mean, I don't like that idea anyway of humor where you can only punch up.
I know, yeah. Punch everything. I mean, that's why I like Jimmy Carr, for example. He's one of my favorites. And and Ricky Gervais. Yeah, so they punch up and down. It's a joke. Joke is a joke.
Yeah.
If you have a position that we have to only punch up or punch down, that means you already have a position. It's a political position.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. But no, they're completely insane. They don't get it. But there's a reason that attacking working classes is and the failure of it is the same reason that Karl Marx admitted back then. Marx said, my ideology is spreading, but I have a problem with the English and British working class. They don't listen. They are not surrendering to Marxism, basically, compared to the other Europeans, for example. Even he and his followers realize that there's something about the British culture that, you know, you can't really tell them what to do. So we didn't become Marxists. Most European nations' cultures, at some point, they became socialist-y. We've had socialist-leaning governments, but the people are not socialists. So the left, now it makes sense that ended up attacking the working classes, whether they know it or not. It's the same reason that Karl Marx ended up attacking the working classes in Britain.
I've got something very exciting to tell you. On July 22nd, Winston Marshall and I will be in conversation about authoritarianism, suppression, and secrets kept by the powers that be in our age. I actually finally found a venue in London willing to have somebody as toxic as me in its location. You'll be able to ask questions during the Q&A and come and meet us. I'll be signing copies of my book as well during the social party afterwards. Tickets are really affordable. The fee just goes towards paying the host and the venue. So Winston and I are doing this because we want to meet you guys and we want to talk about encroaching authoritarianism in a public venue. Tickets are going really fast. A lot of people have been in touch to say that they're coming from across the world and it's only a small, very intimate venue. So get yours as soon as possible on the Free Speech Union website. The link is in my pinned comment below and in the description. Go there, get hold of it, and we'll see you on the 22nd of July. Winston and I are really excited to be meeting you guys. Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think that is about the British resolve?
It's the history. It's the heritage. Each nation has a journey, has a story. And the developed world, by nature, they've had a successful story, but ups and downs. This country, for various reasons, in terms of the origin, and by origin we're talking about, just before William the Conqueror, or they call him William the Bastard, came to conquer in 1066. Because before that, you had the Anglo-Saxons and then you had the local barons and all the kingdoms inside a tiny island. Everyone talks about Magna Carta and all this stuff. But before Magna Carta, we already had the concept of governed by consent, it was called. So it was essentially like local democracy, but it was the upper classes. And make sure you get the consent of the local baron. So from those days... whether you want to call them Anglo-Saxon, the English or the Brits or whatever they are, were always resistant towards authority, but not in an American way. Because Americans say, no, we're resistant towards authority, so we will give you power, the government, you know, governed by the power, by the people, from the people, whatever, for the people. But in this country, there's always been a relationship between the establishment and the common people. The common people accepted that power comes from the top and freedoms come from the top. But there was a handshake agreement that both sides knew. Okay, don't become a tyrant and you respect the rule of law. So that's why we never really technically had any proper dictatorship. We had like 10 minutes. Charles I went crazy. Then Oliver Cromwell, everyone said, oh, that's a solution. He became a dictator. Then 10 minutes later, we said, yeah, let's just go back to constitutional monarchy. Compared to many other countries, we didn't really experience dictatorship or tyranny in that sense. And I think this is just the part of the character of these people.
Speaking of tyranny and the BBC,
oh dear.
I'm good at the segues here. Who's the butcher of Tehran, and what did the BBC say about his legacy?
Oh, God. I love that the BBC obviously like reported him that because everything is so interconnected. What they call, the United Nations called it, the world order since the 40s and 50s. So there are all these institutions from the UN to the IMF and all the others, NATO, that because they're official institutions, they have credibility, right? So the BBC would treat the Iranian regime just like how they would treat the Canadian government. And that's a problem. Back in the days, we wouldn't have done that. If you have a rogue nation, we would have treated them as you are rogue. But because it's part of the UN and the UN gives them their seat at the Human Rights Commission or the Women's Rights Commission, which is hilarious, the BBC have been going around paying respect and covering all the other idiots, paying respect to President Raisi. The man was literally called the Butcher of Tehran because he was the first senior judge or supreme judge after the 1979 paramilitary coup when the Islamic occupation happened. And he was young. He had no experience, like legal experience, and he became the judge. And he was conducting 5-minute trials, and the official figure says at least 5,000 people were executed under him, but actually it's much more. This is just the figures eventually they gave out to the international community. And then he became, obviously, he got to the top, became president. And then, of course, there have been some divisions between him and the supreme leader, because he wanted to be supreme leader. So there's a lot of theories about why he died. Oh, maybe just a good timing coincidence for the supreme leader. I can imagine him having a party that night after the crash. But the BBC and all these guys, you had the European Union bringing down their flag, the UN, like paying respect as if it's some sort of Gandhi character. Like, would you do that if Yahya Sinwar of Hamas dies?
Yes.
Would you do that if Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah died?
I think they would.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at this point. Yeah,
I really think they might. I think they might.
But the thing is, you have to treat someone like Raisi the same way you treated Bin Laden when we killed him. Mm. But because Bin Laden was not part of any entity that was linked to the UN officially, you're allowed to celebrate when he died. Everybody, the US government said, yeah, we did it. But Raisi, no, you're not allowed to celebrate.
But isn't it also... since Bin Laden dies, there's been a bit of a change in the culture. And going back to what we were talking about with sort of who's in charge at the BBC and all of these cultural institutions, I mean, a lot of people have started reassessing Bin Laden's history as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was woke.
Yes, yeah.
He was sort of woke, I gather. I mean, he also went to a posh school, from what I can understand. He came from a rich family as well. He also went against his own culture to try and spread some kind of righteous nonsense. Yep. And didn't accept anyone who thought differently from him.
It's fascinating. It's always been the same. So from my perspective, the biggest two threats to what we call the Western system, Western cultures are right now. There are a number of threats, but the biggest collectives are what I call the far left, and it's a wider group, and also the Islamists, the extremist Islamists, ideological ones. But these people, they are similar. That's why at times they see themselves as allies, because they're both against the power, people power, all that, the illusion of it. Mm. But both sides, the Islamist extremist side, and of course the far left and woke side, whatever you want to call it, all their heroes were not the common man. Look at, for example, Karl Marx, this intellectual living in Soho, pretending that I'm just one of you guys. Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran, rich man. Bin Laden, private school. You had even Bashar al-Assad, a dictator, going to private school here and in Switzerland. Every single one of them, even the heroes of the left, and they're all basically like that posh, they're all like rich, they're all successful, they're all also white men. What happened to your leaders? You're claiming, for a short period of time, Prince Harry became their hero. But these guys are not the common man. What are you doing?
I would take issue with Osama bin Laden being a white man. I mean,
he was quite light skinned.
I suppose he was. I think there's that myth. I've been learning a little bit about that pervading the culture. There's a myth of the working class resistance, which apparently rarely actually happens. Like Les Mis didn't Les Miserables, for those who don't, who wanted to hear me say it Frenchly. I said it very Frenchly. Apparently, this idea, the working class are rising up, and really, it tends to be when the middle class are disaffected, when they're annoyed, and that's, you know, I don't like what's happening to my kids at school. That's when things start to kick off.
Yeah, I mean, democratically or even revolutionary, that's why, for example, for a long time, and things are changing now in British politics, for example. People like David Cameron and on the other side, Tony Blair, kept focusing on what they call the center ground. It's not the center ground. We don't have centrism in this country. They're basically talking about the middle class professional people who are not ideological this way or the other way, but they vote all the time because they pay taxes and they have opinions. You know, they like to moan, they like to gossip, you know, and they're very much involved in society and they vote. That's why people like Cameron were always resistant to right-wingers saying don't make the Tory party too much right-wing because we can't rely on them to come out to vote. Technically they were right, but it changed, especially 2015-16 onwards. We saw with Brexit, we saw with Trump, even Le Pen in France. It's now changed. I'm now hearing from the so-called centrist liberals and the pundits and even media commentators who are now saying even they admit that you can't focus on the so-called center ground right now. Just pick a side. You don't have to go extreme, far right, far left, or this or that. Just basically, if you're a conservative party, just do the conservative policies. They will vote for you. Because it's the center ground people, the middle classes, who might not come out to vote now. Because now they think, oh my God, Tories are so right-wing and Labour, so this, they might not actually come out. And the local elections proved that recently. So it's the actual right-wingers and the left-wingers, you know, the Corbyn fans and, you know, or the Trump fans on this side, who, or Nigel Farage fans, they would come out to vote. But there are still people in, for example, the Tory party who are still thinking, no, let's just focus on the second. What do you mean center ground? It doesn't exist.
Yeah. Oh, that's mad to me. It's just mad to me. That's been changing, I think, of everything.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the woke, it tends to also be obviously the middle class, the liberal elite, as they say.
Champagne socialists, as they call them.
But I learned a thing the other day, nostalgie de la boue, nostalgia of the dirt or the mud. In France, sort of a lot of middle class people started dressing like the peasants.
Yes.
Because that was like a way to be different in status.
Exactly.
Like, oh, look at you boring middle class people. I'm the ones with the different clothes.
But that goes back to France again, because the reason I mentioned the central ground of middle class is because you mentioned, obviously, in terms of revolutions, but even democratically, always worry about the middle classes losing out or feeling that they're losing out. And like cost of living crisis, it was the middle classes that were affected, but felt more affected. And the people at the bottom, they were already affected anyway. Mm. Obviously, objectively, a lot of them will be like, oh, I'm now paying even £500 even more in energy bills. So yeah, I know they're suffering more, but it's not a new thing for them in terms of problems, everyday problems. But when the middle class is like, oh, I have to pay a little bit more taxes now, then when they moan, worry about that. So in Iran, obviously, like, you know, the uprisings are going on. And every 10 years since 1979, there have been an attempt when you had just students and, like, you know, people at the bottom, like, rising up, and it didn't really happen. Now, you got the working classes and the middle classes, again, like France. Now, the regime is worried.
Yeah, that's when it starts. Your Twitter bio says, cancelled by Iran. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, obviously, when I came here as a kid, then I went to university and got involved with politics. In my defense, my dad, he was currently stuck in Iran. He's basically under house arrest. You know, he's, in my defense, he's also a rebel. And he doesn't do authority. He's a contrarian. So he's also been poking the bear. But that combined with me being, at the time when I was in politics, I was a Tory. I was young and naive. But but then the Iranian regime decided to send a letter to my dad and officially banned my entry and said that there's a fatwa against me, basically, because according to them, I am an MI6 Tory agent.
That's what they wrote this in a letter to your dad.
Yeah, I'm an MI6 Tory agent. So if I go at the airport, they will hang me, basically. Yeah.
Wow. And that's explicit. They'll hang you. They won't just imprison you.
No, it's treason. So I'm treasonous. So
do they have like rope in the airport?
Yeah. Oh, no, they do with the cranes. And they do public viewing as well. It's brilliant.
The thing about the cranes, because I've often heard, hanging from a crane.
Yeah.
I hear this, and it's such a bizarre image because a crane is such a modern thing compared to the old world. It's a real combination of old and new world.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I never thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did they start using it? Probably in Cuba and like Soviet Union.
It's almost like a nouveau riche way of
killing. It modernized the French. tyranny.
Gosh. Yeah, that's scary though, isn't it? Do you not worry? Do you worry about this lingering fatwa?
I see away luggage a lot when I travel. As much as I love its looks, I prefer soft side suitcases and always wished Away made one. Well, guess what? Now they do. This suitcase seriously looks better than any old school soft side suitcases I've seen and is designed to be lighter than others on the market. Soft side comes in 4 of their best selling sizes and tried and true colours. There is something for everyone in the lineup, 2 carry on sizes, 2 checked sizes, 4 colours, black, blue, pink, grey. Made from a high strength nylon, the bag is tear resistant as well as weather resistant. I spilled a little bit of coffee on the grey one this morning and can confirm the claim holds up. The bag is soft but not sensitive, super durable, flexible and expandable. Bonus points for the compression pad system that helps you pack it in and the anti-tipping stabilizer that holds the bag steady while expanded. Both of which are proprietary to Away. And that's actually my favourite bit. It doesn't sort of wobble this way and that. I absolutely pack mine full, take it everywhere I go. Well, when I'm going on holiday, that is. And no matter what's packed inside, it doesn't seem to tip. You've got to check out the new soft side luggage from Away. Head on over to awaytravel.com/heretics. That's awaytravel.com/heretics to see the new soft side luggage from Away. awaytravel.com/heretics.
So there have been a couple of incidents recently, the last year or so. I get death threats all the time. That's just normal anyway. But
you didn't tell anyone the address of where you were coming today, did you?
Yeah,
no. Posted it on X.
No, but recently, a while ago, I was almost kidnapped near my house. And I knew it was the Iranian region because I could hear them speak Persian. They failed. So I did get in touch with authorities. They gave me some support. But resources are limited, apparently. They literally left me alone at the end. But I got some advice.
How did they fail to kidnap?
No, it was a whole dramatic story. It's like a movie nonsense scene. There was a white van, and it was in central London, daylight. There was a guy standing next to it on his phone. Then I was just walking, and he said, "Oh, do you have the time?" It's one of those things where you don't really think about it. My instinct, half a second, clearly triggered, like, hang on, he's on his phone. Why is he asking for the time? Not consciously, clearly subconsciously.
Yeah.
So I still reached to get my phone, but somehow my brain wasn't like alert, on standby. So as I was doing that, the side door opened and then 2 other guys tried to grab me. But by that point, because I was on alert, I basically pulled away. They slipped like an idiot. And then so I ran, and luckily the 2 police officers were also on the pavement. For once in London, police officers were walking. So I ran and then they drove off. But then I've been in touch with, of course, the authorities and intelligence, and they've helped. I'm not really sure what happened with them, but I have, again, allegedly, usually they're linked to the Iranian embassy or the Islamic Center, which is in Medeval, which is funded and controlled by the Iranian regime. Which is still allowed to operate, which is really weird.
There's no more fearsome words in the English language than "do you have the time?" Do you know, if anyone ever, I knew that, like, you learned that growing up, don't you? So that's why you had that unconscious feeling. Something's not.
Yeah, why are you asking?
Even before mobile phones and things.
Yeah, yeah.
I was very, if you got the time, mate. Yeah. Oh, I'm about to be killed.
Yeah, usually you do that when you want to approach a girl. Just pretend that you want to start a conversation. You have time.
See, that's even more worrying for girls. Now.
Yeah,
they've got,
exactly.
They've got to worry about Iranian regimes and also you.
Me,
coming up.
Ask about time.
You got the time, love.
Have you subscribed to TCTV?
As well. We'll get people subscribing to your channel. What's the time? Subscribe to the channel. Man, that's scary, though. I mean, you've got to live your life like that now.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm thinking of a backup plan if things get worse. I'm going to move to Florida.
Do you think?
Yeah, probably in Miami. Probably find a house next to Messi and Patrick Bet-David.
Oh, nice.
Here's another, obviously, Iranian who's ended up in America. So, yeah, I mean, I joke, but I'm also kind of serious because I think...
You must have been shaken up when that happened.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah, it. But those things that kind of made me stronger when it comes to... Because every Saturday I go to these protests, Palestinian protests, and to film. And I'm not there to provoke, and people can see the evidence on the live streams I do. But now I'll be more recognized, like, more regularly. And last week, one of the guys came to, like, punch me on the shoulder and just like walked away. But I got him on camera. So the police have been in touch with all that. But they're getting more, I know, yeah. But they're getting more aggressive. But those things I'm not really scared of. I go right in the middle of the march. I'm just worried about the smell of BO, but that's fine.
Is it smelly? I suppose there's a lot of people and it's hot.
It's hot outside. Yeah. But there's also not everyone. those who are very more kind of religious and fundamentalist, they're told not to wear deodorant.
Right.
They're not allowed. So it doesn't help in the summer.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're not asking them what the time is. Well, I suppose you are going and sort of talking to them. And so what are you saying? You're doing bits of, you know, what river, what sea?
No, I don't even do that. Okay. Because there have been enough people who've done that. And that becomes gimmicky now. I'm just usually there just to cover it. Okay. Just to film it. If someone comes to me, then I'll talk to them. But there's enough drama to just cover when you just film. Then you don't need to like go to them and like give them a like, gush of questions, like they'll destroy them or whatever. You don't need to, because all I have to do is just literally put the camera there, and then people watching it, they're like, did that person just say that? Or is that sign? There's a Nazi sign there. Like, literally, the craziest stuff happens every Saturday, and it's so normalized. It's insane.
Mad. Yeah. You know what I want to do? Because I agree with you. It's become gimmicky. People go into the crowd. It was great at first.
Yeah.
Trigonometry did brilliantly.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. But now it's like, okay, it's been done. Yeah. What river? What we've established that not a single person on that march has any understanding of the geography or history of either of the two states or whatever they might be. I want to do like a Louis Theroux back in the day. Yeah. Go and hang out and actually humanize these people and go and hang out with them and like their parents. And like the parents are sitting there like, and I'm like, are you we're very proud of little Tommy. And Tommy's like drawing like, you know, death to Jews or something on his poster, just like the old Louis Theroux, and just being in sort of such a weird environment, and we're like, something's a bit off here.
That's so true. Yeah,
but they'd never. The difference is Louis used to do the far right, and I think although there's that circle, the far right and like the far left, the difference is the far right wanna they sort of feel like they're right and they want to convince other people they're right. The far left, I think they're morally right and don't want to even talk.
But also culturally in Britain, the far right is seven of them, the actual far right, because you know the definition of it, that's. Far right is those who are like the far left, who go with that similarity is authoritarianism and force and violence. But once idea becomes more about traditional values or nationalism, so there are at times, so being racist is not necessarily far right, because far left could also be racist, like Che Guevara, and you don't like black people. But the far right, actual far right, is not compatible with the culture. Now, there are far right in Italy. They're all far right in France, in Germany, in America. Mm-hmm.
That's why Theroux used to go to America.
Yeah. I mean, in this country, you would get like one or two just actually like, you know, just angry racist people. And let's say even in terms of the ratio of like actual racism, this country is still here compared to other countries, but there would still be individuals who are racist. And most of the racists are not actually racist. They are tribalist. And people get surprised when they see me hanging out with the people who are called racists, and I'm not white in that sense. I'm just beautifully tanned. But they don't get it. They're like, why are they hanging out with you?
Like you could hang out with Tommy Robinson.
Yeah, because they're not racist. They are tribalists, and tribalists exist everywhere. I ran a campaign when I was in politics in East London. There were a few still white working class people left in East London. I was knocking on the doors, and the conversation came up, and they said, the reason we are against outsiders is not really just about skin color. Even if a white, posh Chelsea boy comes here, we'll question it. They're just tribalist. It's not even about skin color and all that. They're culturalist, essentially, in a sense that they don't even see the culture they have being similar to that white, posh boy from Chelsea. They see it as a different culture.
That puts me in like a really difficult position ideologically, because on the one hand, I'm going... I don't like that idea of tribalism, and it's very sort of animalistic, and we're humans, we can rise above our biology in that sense, and it's also very exclusive, and it's not very nice, and forget the racism, it's just tribal. On the other hand, I keep being shown things saying, well, people seem to have more social cohesion between people that are just like them. So what's the answer to that?
No, so too much tribalism is obviously bad, but British tribalism is still, for example, even American tribalism at times, is still very open-minded in a sense that you can still fit in. For example, the people I talk about in East London, if you behave like them, and you can still have your differences. I have like relatives and people I know who live there, like even like white English people, because my mother's husband is actually a white Essex type of guy.
Yeah.
And their best friends, their neighbors who are like Indian. But they see them as the same, you know, because it is still the same British culture.
Yeah.
So you can still integrate. And then the problem we have is that the liberal cosmopolitan types of people, ideologues, like the types of like George Osborne or David Cameron types or Tony Blair types, their worldview didn't work because they are rushing into creating this Star Trek fantasy world where, you know, one human race, one president, you know, all that. But we are already by default evolutionary getting there anyway, because the world is getting smaller. We are becoming more similar. More people from different countries, different cultures are wearing the same suit as me compared to like 200 years ago. We're mostly using cutleries compared to 500 years ago, different continent. Yeah. There's still tribes that are very different, but we are by default gradually becoming similar anyway. And even skin color is going to become more similar eventually because of all the mixing and everything else.
Yeah.
But don't rush it, because by default, humans are tribal. Tribal and tribalists are different. So being tribalist is more like an ideology. You're proactively wanting to remain tribal. But tribal is just part of your human nature because, you know, we are like wolves, we like packs. So that's why our homes have a door and windows, and your family, immediate family, is your priority. That's just by nature. That's just what we do. But being tribal means that you can still be open-minded. You can invite a new friend. You can embrace a new friend. But tribalists, kind of more close-minded. And that's, I agree with you. I don't like that.
Yeah. But I suppose it's with that sort of Prince Harry unconscious bias, as we've all got that tribal. He's right about that, but I think he was wrong to do it in the way he did.
Yeah, but they when they talk about unconscious bias and all that, they put everybody in that category of tribalist. Even if someone is just tribal, which is basically all human beings are tribal, they just basically say, oh, if you voted for Brexit, you are racist. Like, what if someone voted for Brexit because they just don't like the EU flag? I don't know. And there are so many reasons.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, Prince Harry also, I mean, the other thing is that he's got an IQ of about 7, so I don't know. The thing you said about suits is interesting because, you know, that's why I used to do a channel more about cults. That was my old channel. And the Hasidic Jewish one just interested me more than any of them. I suppose being Jewish as well, I felt like I could go in there. I wouldn't be accused of anything, you know?
They built tunnels in New York.
There was that thing, wasn't it?
That was funny. In Brooklyn. I don't know what happened with that.
It sort of died down suddenly, didn't it? It was weird. They're like the most secretive.
Yeah.
They're fascinating.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was a woman I interviewed, she came out of it, which is not easy to do. I mean, respect to her. And she, on her own, just that now she's just totally on her own. What does she do now? Went to some job interviews. And she went and she didn't get the job at this place. And she asked after, why didn't I get the job? And they said, because of how you're dressed. And she was just wearing like some jeans. And she was absolutely shocked that suits are seen by us as smarter than casual wear.
That's interesting.
Because it's subjective. Yeah. This means nothing.
No,
an alien. Exactly. An alien could see this as like, that's your sportswear, is it?
Yeah, literally. That's such a good point. Yeah. Because for her, jeans should have been enough. Like, hey, I'm now different.
But interesting to, as you point out, like the whole world now dresses. I mean, most of the world, you go to Japan, as far as I can think, ideologically. I'd love to go to Japan. And suits just like
that. Well, that was an interesting thing. The Islamic Republic of Iran after 79, they went against any symbol of Western things. So they banned ties, but then they wear suits.
So everyone had like shirt open.
Yeah, but no, they do this like full button thing, even men.
So that sounds, it seems a bit Scientology sort of.
It's a bit culty. But the whole point was to ban like ties and things like that. But ties and suits came at the same time, basically. As in, like, you know, the concept is Western. Like, what are you doing? Well, you forgot to ban the suits.
Plus what ties represent, if you think symbolically, holding things together. They were just like, let it all fall apart symbolically. When that happened in Iran, and I'm wary that I've spoken about this a couple of times today, but I know that people listening will hear this, you know, several episodes, different weeks and things. But my understanding is a similar thing to what's happening today was going on between sort of the woke leftists and the Islamists. Is that right?
Yes. So obviously, this episode might go out a bit later on. And so now that Iran is free, just in case, there is a fascinating thing because the whole point of the 1979 incident was actually a perfect example to be studied, but humans never learn from history. So same thing that's happening here, I'm exaggerating, but a proper version of it happened in Iran. So in the 70s, Iran became a liberal secular society. You know, they've become prosperous, slowly getting better and better, freedoms and all that. Western, they called it, but it's just, you know, being civilized. The main opposition to the monarchy were the communists funded by the Soviet Union. They were the ones doing the uprising. They were the activists with guns and all that. So when the SAVAK and the secret police were going after them, they were not like ordinary people wanting freedom. They already had freedom. It was communists wanted to do treason. But when they were doing it, at the end, when the Shah left, the last king, the Ayatollah, who was in exile in France, at that point, the evidence is now out because it's been revealed a few years ago. CIA and France and a bit of MI6 were helping the Islamists to train them because they realized the Shah's going to go. We're not going to support him anymore. It's too late now. But in order to stop the communists, because it was the 70s, wow. Cold War, let's try and get these guys in. You know, well, yeah, they're just nice religious people, right? And we could control them because they're idiots. The next day, the Islamists went on the streets saying death to America. The whole plan backfired.
Oh.
Yeah.
And, the one thing they didn't want them to yeah, be literally, saying. Yeah.
So, but they went hand in hand when the revolution was happening. It wasn't a revolution because it wasn't, there was no like popular uprising. It was a paramilitary coup with guns. But when that was happening, the Islamists and the far left, the communists, were going hand in hand. But the moment the Islamists took power, they also killed the communists. Same thing that Hitler did. Obviously, like Hitler and that ideology came from socialism and all that. And, you know, say national socialism. But the moment he got power, he killed the communists. So that's why the communists called him far right.
Right.
So the whole thing is insane. And the same thing's happening now. We got the champagne socialists and all the spoiled kids from Brighton and Bristol and other places going there with their avocado coffees on the street saying, from the river to the sea. You do realize, and with the pride flag, if they take over, they're going to hang you.
Yeah.
Going to have a rooftop party with you.
Yeah. It's fucking hell.
Literally. Yeah.
They actually would.
Yeah.
Would they actually do that?
Yeah, because they keep saying it. I've got the footage on my channel where every time there's one pride flag, the Islamist side, they take the flag, they rip it apart, they say, go away, you're not welcome here. And these people are masochists, these woke liberals. They keep going back. Like, what are you like to be like harassed?
Do they hate Jews more than they dislike being harassed?
Because they associate Jews with power and you know, and also whiteness. Mm. It's not the Jews' fault because for decades, for centuries, they keep getting sent to exile. So they end up becoming white and having babies with other white people. Oh. But you know, they have their own country and Israel is strong. So strength equals evil.
There's anyone 50 Muslim countries. How many Christian countries are there? 30, 40?
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know. These people, what do you think it is in the minds of the woke that makes them want to die?
But I think the whole ideology is based on being anti rather than being pro. Being anti things is not enough. You have to also be pro something. And they're going around just complaining about things without actually having a productive solution. They don't offer you anything. So, for example, they say, I don't know, we need net zero because, you know, we have 2 years to live. But they don't actually have a workable solution to in a positive way. Mm-hmm. They just say, stop using cars, stop eating meat. To what end?
Yeah.
They say the same thing about, you know, for example, when it comes to the wokeism, whatever you want to call it, this regressive, illiberal ideology saying, I don't know, all white men are bad, so they're evil. We should cancel them. Then what?
Mm.
Like straight women, feminists, bad. What then?
Gay guys about
they're not even promoting, for example, trans people or gay people. They're just attacking you if you are skeptical. So it's interesting. They don't actually. So even when they celebrate, for example, Pride, and Pride used to be just normal. People were gay, just go and get drunk and have fun. That was it. Now it's become politicized and all these political banners and all this. It's all these idiots who have no idea about anything about like the gender lobby or the trans issues, scientifically, medically, or even like in a normal way. They are the ones who are the advocates. They are the ones who are the activists. And like, then if I say something, my opinion about, you know, the trans issue, for example, they say you can't talk because you're not one. But you're not one either. Like the even the trans community, they have a silent majority. A lot of them don't want to be associated.
Yeah,
with the militant ones. Like, hey, I feel like this for whatever reason. Just leave me alone. I'm gonna stay at home, do whatever I want to do, but I don't want to go out there, do this whole like, you know, hoopla and like, you know, go on the streets and like hang out with political signs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's insane.
Yeah. They feel like they're speaking on behalf of those people.
Yeah. But
then when those people have different views, such as Caitlyn Jenner, who's
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But that's why I've had it on my channel so many times. I've been they've attempted to cancel me, but I'm uncancelable because I've canceled myself.
On your channel?
No, no. These incidents happen, but every time they try to cancel me, is I realize somebody gets offended on behalf of someone else in a different continent from a different century. It's fascinating. Why are you offended? What happened with the slave trade in Nigeria 200 years ago when slave trade was happening everywhere, and also they were the ones selling the slaves. It's not like that the
Brits... You've gone into controversial territory. That changed very quickly.
Escalated quickly.
Did anyone listen? Nobody listening expected that. Yeah, very good point about the woke stuff. And the thing about the slave trade...
Slavery was bad, but...
But don't you even realize how good slavery was? Everyone was, that's it. That went very...
Hard work,
I've never seen how quickly an idea that obviously, you know, all ideas deserve introspection and learning and all of these things. I'm intrigued by it, but I was shocked by that.
I love that. 30 seconds ago, I said I'm uncancellable. Then I said that.
The thing about the slave, really, this a similar point might be about the indigenous Americans.
Yep.
This idea that they were like these pure, almost inhuman. I mean, humans are human, right? Humans do human horrible things always.
Yeah.
That is history. Every time there's been people, they've done awful things.
Yeah.
But like suddenly, like those people must have been utterly perfect.
And yeah, they were angels.
They must have been killing each other. I don't even know.
They treat the Native Americans as one tribe, one collective. Mm. There were so many different tribes. They were killing each other anyway. I'm not making any excuses for, like, you know, what happened when the white Europeans went there. Mm. But you're talking, and when they talk about the British Empire, for example, you're talking about a time when humans, tribes, or nations were either empires or wanted to be empires. That was just the norm.
Yeah.
And so that's what even the Native Americans, the small tribes, they were doing the same thing on a smaller scale. They were expanding their own empires on a smaller scale against each other. It's just that the white Europeans came with gunpowder, more successful.
Yeah.
And then it's not saying it was a good thing or a bad thing in that sense. It's just that was just the natural part of humanity.
Human history.
But yeah, I mean, but they're treating him like not just angels, but also just one tribe.
Mm.
They were all united. They were having a great life. And they all got killed.
They've got different ways of knowing and
knowledge
and all of these. It's so patronizing and racist against those people, this idea that they, you know, I would hate that. I would hate to think people thought of the Jews, for example, as just like this, which people do. They say, like with the Holocaust, they say, well, why didn't they fight back? It sort of dehumanizes them. And many Jews did fight. Of course they did. And then they lost. They had, you know, guns. And
well, the SS were quite strong.
And humans are going to human, you know, brains are brains, and we all act tribally and all of these things.
Yeah.
Man. But that slavery thing was...
just came out of nowhere.
Bloody hell. But you know, I know what you're saying. People, you know, humans are going to do terrible things to humans.
Yeah. That's just learn from history and get better instead of just moaning about it. What happened 700 years ago?
Mm.
No. How is that going to achieve anything?
Yeah. I absolutely agree. With what you've told me about the radical Islam combo with the left in Iran and all of that, when the BBC says things like Iran is mourning the death of its president. I mean, does that mean all Iranians? I mean, what Iranians are they talking about are mourning? In this?
Well, it's fascinating. So, according to their own official stats from the Middle East, there is in Iran, it's like 88 million people now. So let's just say 90. Only 30% are practicing Muslims now. So because the regime is Islamic, the BBC will assume everyone's basically Muslim. There's a massive rise of Christianity. There's also a lot of people converting back to Zoroastrianism, the Persian religion.
Hmm.
But that's not the only issue. It's one of those situations where, like the white revolutions there in Eastern Europe, the Eastern Bloc with the Soviet, it got to a point where it's literally the people against the tyrant. It's not really half and half. It's not like here, half people are Tory, half of them are Labour. It's not like that. So according to the stats, about 5%, to be generous, because it's like 3%-ish, but 5% are supporters. And when you look at what 5% is, firstly, they're all cultists. So you're all members of the IRGC and your families and all that. So that's it. You're part of the regime, basically, like a mafia family. But 5% is still a huge number out of 9 million. So when you get 2 million people coming out on the street for funeral, firstly, that's not even all the supporters. You would assume they're all should come out, right?
Yeah.
So that's the small, like a half of it or whatever. But then the BBC said, well, look at this, so busy. That means everybody's on that side. Well, does that show that when the Islamists come out on the streets in London, that everybody in London is in favor of, even not just any Palestinian cause, are they against Israel, for example? And the headlines are stupid. They should just say the supporters of the regime. Don't even call them the way I would call them. You don't have to call them, if you're the BBC, you don't have to call them Islamists. You don't have to call them terrorists. Just call them the supporters of the Iranian regime.
Yeah, more neutral.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because
they would say it, but with Putin, if Putin has a rally, they'd say Putin supporters. Just say the same. Instead of saying the Iranians. Oh.
Yeah. Or the Russians are worried. You know, they wouldn't do it that way, would they?
No, exactly.
So bizarre.
It's a double standard. Yeah.
It is a double standard. And I've heard, I mean, in addition to Iran, I've heard Lebanon used to be pretty secular as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Culturally Christian, but secular, yeah. Yep.
And that's also, is that been taken over by
same
Islam?
Time. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
is that going to happen here?
Well, I mean, when you listen to people like Douglas Murray, they would say yes. And there is a point about, even back in the day, Islam's ideology itself, not necessarily the actual faith, you know, because you can still be culturally Muslim, you're like, oh, I'm just a Muslim. But the ideology itself from day one was based on expansion. It never succeeded when it comes to preaching, unlike Christianity. For example, Judaism was not based on preaching. They're like, yeah, we're just Jews, leave us alone.
Yeah.
Actually, we don't want you in our religion.
That's why people hate us.
It's very hard to become a Jew. Yeah. You'll be rejected
we're
three
not
times.
Letting you in.
Yeah, yeah.
We're doing our thing over here. Exactly. I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Yeah. Right? Christianity was based on spreading the word, and that was working. And of course, when it became establishment with Vatican, it became accelerated. But then the Islamic ideology was basically from day one, there's a sword on the as a symbol. Because it's based on expansion. Mm-hmm. But even that didn't fully work. You know, the short term, they had the Muslim Empire and they got to Spain and then the Crusades happened, they had to go back. But even from day one, the second method was to simply have a lot of babies. And they still have a lot of babies. That's why the Jewish population in the Middle East is still going down because the Jews are becoming more middle class and they don't have babies anymore, like here.
Yeah.
But the Islamic cultures, wherever they are, they have a lot of babies. They're actually helping humanity, as Elon Musk would say. But actually, Christians and Jews have babies because this is how the West will fall. The Western Europe will fall. It's not necessarily by, you know, Islamic tanks crossing borders. Demographic will change. And this is not supposed to be like a xenophobic rant. This is simply an objective observation about the culture will change. Let's just say objectively, not saying if this country becomes culturally Islamic is good or bad, but I'm just saying it's on the road because the birth rate, forget about the small boats crisis that more people are coming in, even the birth rate compared to the Christians and Jews, for example, or even like primarily secular atheists not having babies, they're even scared of getting married. But then 20 years, be generous, a lot of the more younger people who are children now from the Islamic side, and they are becoming more empowered anyway, they are more politically active. We just saw from the local elections, a lot of them were elected, fair enough, as councillors.
Moth and Ali.
Yeah. But then 20 years, 30 years, it'll be their children who'll be adults. And all you need is 20%, 30% of House of Commons becoming a unified culture or mentality, let's just say, because we're talking about the Islamic, so it could be anything. And by default, that's a collective, that's a tribe. They will have the power to change the constitution legally and democratically. Change the constitution. No, shut down the pubs because we don't like beer, for example, or whatever, right? So you don't even have to have the Iranian revolution sort of thing. It's a demographic change. And what are you going to do about it? Because it's democratic.
Yeah.
See? If you fight against it, like if you say like mass deportations now, first you have to then clarify, who do you mean? You mean just anybody who's a Muslim? Because you can do that, but that's a little bit authoritarian, right? And what are you going to do? What's the other solution? Purge? You're going to do Hunger Games? You're going to go attack people just because they're Muslim? So any solution is, that's violence, right? Or that's radical. That means democratically, demographic change, it will happen anyway. So legally and constitutionally, you can't do anything about it. That's the problem. So unless there's one solution that's kind of worked for humanity, and that was also working in Jordan, Lebanon, Iran, and Syria.
I'm desperate to hear what the solution. I feel like I want to say to people, you're going to find out after the break what the solution to this is.
Make humans rich.
Wow.
Make them rich. Prosperity. That by default makes you, it will take a while, obviously, generation wise, educated and civilized because you have to behave next to your neighbor because your neighbor's behaving, wearing better suits. And then by default, you'll have more responsibilities, more jobs, and more businesses. And that causes stress. When you have those daily stress, then you're not concerned about ideological causes.
Except for Osama bin Laden and some of the others.
Well, yeah, they're the grifters, basically. But my point is that what I'm providing as a solution is actually what's happened to the rest of the Western world, so the Christians and Jews. And long term, that becomes a problem. It's a cycle of doom because the reason we are complacent is because over the last 100 years or so, we became more educated and civilized and, you know, professional jobs, businesses, then by default, you then become too stressed about those things. Then you don't even get married and you get divorces and these sort of things happen. And liberalism would go up, too much liberalism, secular liberalism would go up. So what's happened to us, basically like a virus, we need to give that virus to the rest of the world as well. And the tribes that some might call, they're still backwards or they're still not developed or civilized. And that's why they're angry and they're still focused on like ideological causes.
But many of these countries where a lot of the radicalism is coming from are extremely rich, oil rich.
Yeah, but those countries, like for example, like Saudi and obviously like in Syria at the time, they shut them down. Dictatorship as a norm in those cultures, because they can't really have democracy unless the culture is ready for it, was working to an extent because they were shutting down those voices, the few crazies.
Yeah.
But then with all the stuff that happened with the American interventions in the Middle East, it kind of put up the lid a little bit, got out of control. Then the ISIS were created and all the Al-Qaedas and even the dictators, even Saddam, if he was here, he'd be like, and the guy was a tyrant, he was evil, but he would be like, I told you so. He would say that. It's a big issue because Saudi, they have a policy to deal with the likes of Bin Laden even now. Bin Laden has went rogue. But they always have the Bin Ladens. They just keep them rich and keep them like, okay, if you have any like dodgy dealings, go do behind the scenes with, I don't know, CIA or Mossad. And I'm kind of simplifying it. But sometimes they get out and shit happens.
I feel like, again, the issue of getting richer is like, I mean, the poorest people now are significantly wealthier in terms of what their comforts and things than they were 100 years ago. So to an extent, humanity feels, I mean, you're comparing to other people, aren't you? So there's always going to have to be people who are at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're going to be pissed off.
By rich, I'm not talking about make everybody millionaires. I'm just saying richer than like absolute poverty. Just the riches, the prosperity as a society, basically do what we're supposed to be doing anyway. Growth. And obviously, if you listen to socialists, they say, well, redistribute the current wealth. I'm like, no, just create more wealth. and everybody will actually benefit. It's simply saying, make people also feel that they have opportunities, but not in a patronizing way, in a peer pressure way. The Anglo-Saxon, the British mentality, which then created the American mentality, because some of them went rogue here. They're like, yeah, we want to be even more free. So we're going to leave England and Ireland, for example. It's not really just giving them opportunities to start your own businesses. You force them, peer pressure. This culture is based on, oh, my neighbors just started a business. I'm going to have to do the same thing because, you know, I hate that one. I'm jealous. You know, you do that. Everything is about peer pressure.
Yeah.
Like, look at TikTok, look at Instagram, the whole obsession with social media trends. We just follow what the other person is doing.
Yeah.
We all become sheeple. So use that for advantage. Saying like, you know, but right now, when you have like, you know, a couple of people in, objectively speaking, what we call ghettos, like in a part of Birmingham or Luton or East London, they are still living in the West. So when my mother came here and myself, we were in Southeast London. So for us, it's about which part of the glass you see, the half full or whatever the other side. So we still saw the working class Southeast, but for us, we're like, oh, there's still McDonald's there. Oh, there's Primark. That's cheap clothes, but we could afford it compared to like Iran. So for us, this was prosperity. But right now there are people in like East London and it becomes ghettos in a sense that when they leave the house, when they walk to shops, everybody will speak the same language. They don't have to even meet a white person to speak English. So psychologically, I have a feeling it still reminds them of the original country, which didn't have opportunities. So then they see central London and the white people on TV, for example, or on their phones. And I have a feeling psychologically, somehow, they still think they're somewhere else. And they're like, we don't have those opportunities. You're still in London. But they don't feel. So they make themselves more isolated. But it became a government policy as well. Why did you send everybody in one place? Like, idiots.
Because the issue, I think, as you're saying, is like the issue isn't necessarily... Well, I guess, okay, if you're saying that if Muslims become more secular, because they have more Western wealth.
Yes. Well, they're more stressed about jobs and businesses, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I could go out on the march now, but I'm just going to watch
the end of
TV. The football's on. That's I'm going to watch the England game.
That's why anti-Brexit Remainers gave up on protesting. They got busy with jobs.
Yeah, just got a nice job. I'm doing fine. Going out with a girl tonight. Like, I don't need this stuff. Yeah. Well, that's the only way. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, it's difficult because certain cultures... as they are now, they're not compatible. And we have to be honest. So the current, it's not all Islamic cultures. It's also based on class. So we will be absolutely fine if we have this rich, upper middle class Saudi kid comes here. Because yes, they might have been born in Saudi and technically Islamic, but he's going to sit here and drink beer and have bacon. And by that, we're simply saying, as an example, they are basically behaving like a Westerner, rightly or wrongly, obviously. If you talk to like, the Taliban, like, that's not right. But my point is, the current type of people stereotyping from those countries and the Middle East and North Africa, they're not the original people who came here a few decades ago when they created Edgware Road in London, the road that's full of Arabs. They were just the rich middle-class Arabs. Everybody was fine with that for decades. Nobody had a problem with Edgware Road. But the current people is more lower classes, and obviously like, they primarily escape poverty. They're not political refugees. They're obviously economic migrants. So they are harder to integrate. They're not compatible. But if they choose, they can. Any human, you can choose to change. But it goes back to the culture and the ideology as well. Imam Tawhidi, who was from Iran, he's now in Australia, he's a big figure now, he does podcasts. He's still an imam, he's still basically a Shia Muslim, but he's basically fighting against Islam or Islamism. He says Islam is not reformable because it's a final text with the stamp on it, but Muslims can. So his fight is to change Muslims, to modernize Muslims. That's the fight in the future, you know, make them rich.
That would be good. What do you make of accusations that you are an Uncle Tom?
Yeah, I do love that. Yeah. What else do I get? I get coconut, which I'm like, I'm not that dark. You have to be dark to be coconut.
Coconut's pretty dark.
Yeah. Uncle Tom. Well, Uncle Tom, you have to be fully black. The whole point was, some sense. But what's the other one? Yeah, I get those. It's funny. It's but it kind of proved that, that the proper racism I get is actually from the left in this country. Which shouldn't make any sense. If someone is now watching this, it was not political at all, and just randomly watching this video, like, well, I was told that it's the white right-wingers who are racist. No. Like, I've, for example, received comments, like everybody at some point from someone who's just like, white working class person. But the level of racism you get is like, oh, go home. I'm fine with that. Go back home. That's the best level of racism. It's so British. Yeah. But the anger, the aggressive death threats because I'm a tanned right winger. Well, I'm not even a right winger. I'm just basically a classical liberal, whatever I am. It's fascinating that it comes from the left.
That is, yeah. Well, it's also, it's more insidious, isn't it? I found the same thing as a Jew. The stuff from the right, occasionally, and I'm sure it's the same for you, occasionally you get reminded of quite how vitriolic some people on the sort of the right-wing racism can be.
Yeah.
And that can be a bit of a shock again. You're like, oh, that's reminded me.
Yeah. Luckily, they're a minority, but they exist, yeah.
That's not, but yeah, on the internet, they sort of gather in certain places. And I've been on those sort of video, like channels and things, and like Tim Paul, I went on his show, and like, all of it was and all this.
So. Well, recently I had this issue. Me and Tommy Robinson were both getting attacked from a small group of what we called the white right-wingers. But these are the people who have platforms as well. And very outspoken. Fair enough. At least you're standing your ground. But they were attacking me and Tommy because we're not ethno-nationalist enough, basically. So they were saying, so one of them was saying, basically, anybody who's mixed race, but literally born here and, you know, ancestors still here, mixed race should be deported. Like, it's a very, very Puritan view. It's just classic ethno-nationalism, which is kind of funny when it comes to this country, considering the whole point of the Anglo-Saxons, where they were from all over the place early days. But we're not a nation of immigrants like America. You know, I don't like when people say, oh, it's always been a nation of immigrants. No, it was a nation of all, even like America, was settlers rather than immigrants. But it's fascinating that people like Tommy and myself, especially Tommy, gets accused of not being right-wing enough. Because he's actually not racist. He actually stood up to these people. That's why they attacked him and myself. Because he said, these idiots, they're racist because they're just attacking people based on their skin color. Even 50% of their skin color, which makes no sense. Like, if you attack someone based on the cultural stuff and because they, I would say, this person is not compatible with our values, but he also wants to do harm. He wants to, for example, plant a flag of Islam or Karl Marx on top of Downing Street. I want that person to go. I mean, that's slightly more legitimate compared to saying, well, I don't know, you have a big nose or you're brown, you need to go. That it's not your fault.
Yeah. Well, it's the difference between, yeah, of course, judging someone for innate features of their hardware, as I've heard Douglas Murray say in this, or their software. So no, absolutely.
Of course, Douglas will talk about that.
Yeah. No, it's great. Oh, I think he was talking about the woke trying to get in on the they're trying to disguise software as hardware.
Yep. Yes.
So certain woke beliefs and certain trans things as like, look, you know, don't pretend this is hardware. Exactly. We know you weren't born this way. This is nonsense, and let's snap out of it and stop trying to make me unable to criticize your beliefs and your actions.
Exactly. So, go back to slavery. I'm kidding.
You bloody love slavery. I've got another question for you, but where can people find your excellent work?
So my flat is in everyone knows where I live now, apparently. We've got a YouTube channel, 2CTV, TOUSI, but we also have a website. We've launched a new platform, 2CTV Plus.
This is the royal we.
It's actually a team now. So I've actually spent all my money. I've lost all my money to build this platform. I've got a new website, 2C.tv. And they can go sign up. It's sort of like a Netflix model. But we're doing it because I want to give something back. I don't like to do fundraising or ask for donations. But I've created a product, lots of shows, documentaries coming out. We've got a documentary called Britain's Multiculturalism Myth. It should be good, hopefully. Or get cancelled. But the whole point was to actually have something to also give back. It's a business. It's a product. You pay, you get something in return. But also, it's to keep me independent. Because I've told all my viewers and my supporters, if you don't support, I'm going to go sell out.
Yeah. If you don't support me, Mossad will.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I get accused of getting Jewish shekels there.
Of course.
Still waiting for that bit.
I'll chuck you a few after the... get some from the family shekel vault.
Yeah.
Who's a heretic you admire?
Me? I don't... Well, that could be anyone, right? That could be anyone.
Yeah, that's radical.
Yeah. I mean, that shouldn't count, but... William Gladstone. He went against the norm. He went against the establishment. Well, that's a terrible example, but because I love Gladstone. He's my favorite.
Give me a line on Gladstone.
Well, the norm was a big government became a thing, protectionism, and in the name of the Christian establishment, the Tories became basically against, and even part of the Whigs became anti any sort of progress or any change. And Gladstone became the father of what we call free trade, but also free markets and free speech, small government, and he did basically a democratic version of what Guy Fawkes wanted to do as a terrorist, blow up parliament. He just took over parliament, and then he made what we now call classical liberalism the norm, you know, as a rebel.
Well, it's a fascinating heretic. Thank you. Thank you, Maya Tusi. People, please give a big sort of round of digital applause to Maya Tusi and check out Maya Tusi TV. There's a link in the description. There is also a link to my new, Substack, where I write. What is Substack is what you're asking. It's just a members thing where you can get emails. You can opt out of the emails and just come onto the website from time to time. And I will be writing on there once a week. Well, articles once a week about things I think about the culture wars and things like that. And weird, interesting stories as well. And then a second article each week that will be about things I've learned, shocking things from different podcast guests. There will also be on there, if you sign up to the paid version, you get the ad-free version of the podcast, which you can listen to in the Substack app. So there's loads of different things. That's andrewgoldheretics.substack.com, and that's going to be also in the description. Please click on it, and I will see you next time.